Good afternoon, you're very welcome. You're listening to Scariff Bay Community Radio, and this is Local Media This Week, the programme where we have a look at the Clare print media, the Clare Champion and the Clare Echo, and we see what they're talking about this week, and we have a chat about it as well. Local Media This Week is sponsored by Ruth Griffin Photography, Ruth based in Feakle. So, we're delighted to have our full panel today. John S. Kelly, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Jim.
And Pat O'Brien, good to see you, Pat.
Thank you.
And David, good to see you
good
too,
to you,
David Fleming.
See you, Jim. And happy St. Patrick's Day.
Indeed, thank you very much. And we'll share it to everybody. Now, we'll go on with looking at, the front pages. And there's the front of the Clare Echo, dodgiest of dodgy developers. Pat, that must be, I mean, to be a dodgy developer is one thing, but to be the dodgiest of the dodgy is something else.
Well, Barrick is a story here on the Clare Echo, Barrick Mahon. Clare TD has described Clare County Council, the dodgiest of dodgy developers, for the manner in which they have initiated the demolition of the Francis Street cottages. As first reported in the Clare Echo, the council applied for Section 179 planning exemption, which enabled the granting of planning permission without any submissions from the public or elected representatives, to be knocking the row of cottages in Francis Street and Innes. Deputy McNamara admitted he was shocked to learn the High Court had granted leave to judicial review. The permission the council had granted itself to the site. In such circumstances, the usual practice is for the developers to wait the outcome of the court case before proceeding. Clare County Council is now acting like the judgiest of judgy developers, he added.
Yes, because a judge could tell you put it back up again.
He could, yeah, he could.
Do you know, wasn't there a pub, a sort of a crooked pub or a well-known pub in
England? Yeah.
Where about?
Which was demolished.
Demolished.
Well, it had burnt down. The owners decided to demolish it. It was a protected structure, and now they've been ordered to put it back up.
To put it back up again.
And in Limerick, we've had a case in the past 20 years where a very prominent and prestigious hotel, I won't mention its name, when it was being developed, did demolish a part of that protected structure, and they too were ordered to rebuild. And they did rebuild. And of course, the cost involved in those things. So you have to be careful if you're a developer.
And this was a sort of an old hotel in the UK and a bit crooked as well. And
yes.
I suppose they will have to put it back.
It was called the Crooked House.
Yes. Okay, anyway, Michael is very suspicious of Clare County Council. I remember seeing them take down the slates one day. I was in Ennis about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, they have taken down, there was a fairly new bungalow at the back of the cottages there, facing, we'll say, out towards the door. The gable of them, we'll say, was to the back of the cottages. And they have that, they're demolishing that as well.
Yeah,
so that's... That's just pretty new. It's a fairly new bungalow.
Yes. Anyway, we'll go on.
The important point that I think Deputy McNamara is making is they're not acting illegally as such, but... they are using the powers granted to them under the Planning and Development Acts, the council is, to bypass the normal public consultation processes. So they're acting as both the authority giving permission and also the developer. And that is, I think, what he's highlighting as a dodgy thing. And it is dodgy. Like, we have checks and balances for reasons, but... Because we're in a housing crisis, because we're in this, that, and the other, our legislation provides for this sort of thing to happen. I don't like it, and I would be with Deputy McNamara on
it. And there's another story there on page 4 of the Clare Champion. Council grilled in Tin Mill Alone, funding for Innes 2040.
Were you doing the grilling on this point?
On the spotlight of fiery council meeting.
Yes.
So I think there was
a fiery meeting.
Fiery council meeting, yes.
And it looked to me like the officials, let's say, were... You know, for disagreeing with what the officials were doing, that they were attacking the councillors, telling them they had hidden agendas.
Hidden agendas, yeah, yeah. And PJ Kelly got up on his high horses and he got kind of cross, I think, at the meeting.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's so,
So
he hasn't made his valedictum yet. He is not.
No.
His goodbye speech.
He's there until the 7th of June at least.
Yeah.
Now, there's a small bit there as well. Daly begging Cleister Kirkpatrick. So at this meeting, Pat Daly was welcoming this Cleister Kirkpatrick. But there was also a motion passed at the meeting. A three million loan to finance a 3.5 million project to develop 300 plus care parking facilities in Innes. So they've drawn down a loan to develop care, and they're taking away the care parking in every street and every street.
And developing the car park in the GA car park.
Yeah, and they're going and out in Drumbeagle at the town council had placed there as well. They're going developing.
And what do you feel about the development of the car park in the GA ground?
Well, there's no problem with the
GA will make a few bob out of that.
Huh? They probably will, yeah.
And they'll still have a car park.
They'll have a much better car park.
They will.
John, I don't understand the maybe Peter Kelly is right. I don't understand the logic in taking away two car parks and getting a 3 million loan to develop two new car parks.
But I suppose, Pat, the logic is they want to use the ground at Abbey Street and wherever else to build whatever they're building. And it's just, and they're trying to ensure that if we take these car park spaces away to build something, we have to put the car parking somewhere else. Mm. Wouldn't that be the logic?
But I don't know. Is there not a logic in this?
I suppose it depends on whether you see an advantage in having a building and a commercial property in the Abbey Street car park.
Yeah. That's the big question, and of course for many businesses and people in Ennis, they don't see any benefit to it. And we saw photo montages of this new building on the Abbey Street site, which only aggravated matters. And then I suspect there are people who would want to see that development right in the middle of Ennis rather than on the outskirts of Ennis. Yeah. So it is a question of whether you see it as an advantage, as a good commercial advantage or not for the town of Ennis.
Anyway, Jim, they're staying on the front page.
Yes, John.
Of the Echo. There's an interesting heading: Carey's work on succession plan.
Hmm. Yes. Now,
an interesting heading, isn't it, by Padraig McMahon?
It has a kind of a royal twang about it.
There is. It's not a healthy twang.
Who are we talking about, John?
Well, that's it nowadays. It's a little column on the likely successor.
To TD Joe Carey.
Joe Carey.
Jay has been ill for much of the year, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. And there's been a question mark of whether he'll even be on the ballot at the next general election.
The suggestion there nearly is that he will not be on the ballot.
Yeah. The story goes on that his sister Leonore is understood to be touted. The grammar here now isn't the best. His sister Leonore is understood to be touted to enter the political stage, with party insiders acknowledging that Joe's prospects of appearing on the ballot for the next general election are increasingly thin. Mm. And John, would you? You know, they're looking to a family member. Is that, do you think, healthy?
There used to be a time when if you're a footballer in a particular county, you might be mentioned.
You might be tapped.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You were never changed. You were a footballer in a particular county.
Are you talking from experience?
I am talking from experience. absolutely.
But in this case, we do know of political dynasties in Irish politics.
Football was important to help the dynastic growth. Okay.
And hurling, Jack
and
Lynch.
And Jack. Was it the football or the hurling? No, the
could be either with Jack. But he only won one medal for football, I think. Yeah. Is that right?
John Donlan.
In
Galway.
In recent years, you have very few footballers or hurlers going.
That's right.
But you do have political dynasties still, don't you? I mean, whether they're parties or independents. I suppose, at the end of the day, of course, it's up to the public whether they want people or not. The advantage there are for people like the Careys is the name is known, the connections are known, you're kind of bred up to it. Think of the Healy Rays down in Kerry.
Yeah.
You know, Jackie, the two sons, the grandchildren and the nieces and nephews and the first cousins, they're well known and it's been bred up in them. Now, I'm not saying that's a good thing. All I'm saying is that they've got name recognition, which you can see if you're from a political party point of view, that you can avail of that advantage. Yeah. Now, is it good for the body politic? I don't know, but it's ultimately up to the electorate.
It's also human nature, in that if you have somebody, you know, the late Donald Carey, for example, and he would have a group of very loyal people who went out with him and walked the roads and knocked at the door.
Yeah.
And they would be very...
Personally loyal.
Personally loyal.
Yeah.
And I mean, those same people would probably have no bother transferring that loyalty to his son, which...
Exactly.
That's a fair analysis of it, Jim, you know?
And it
explains a multitude. It's just that you don't have an opportunity too often in Irish politics to see how the wind is blowing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And there's probably loads of people in Fine Gael, or several people, who would love to
get the opportunity to stand. Yeah, and they're maybe councillors.
Yeah.
It says.
Yeah, but it will go eventually. It will go to a convention anyway. So,
but you know, these conventions can be sewn up, Pat. Sometimes, don't you?
Yes.
Well, if there's people to stand, they'll have to.
Oh, they'll have to put themselves forward.
They'll have to be a voter.
Yeah, and it is the nature of these things, and that is the nature of politics. Anyway, it says here that the Carey family are keeping very tight-lipped on what succession plans may be in place, while no official decision has been made by Fine Gael nationally or locally. So, I mean, the general election could be this year.
I think it will.
It'll have to be held, but certainly within 12 months, so March, this time next year, we will have a new government of some, or we might have an indication of a new
anyway.
Government. A new Dáil, certainly. So they'd want to be getting going on it.
Don't they have time at the bottom? It's four.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on. The town of Ennis will be hopping on the front of the Clare Champion. The mayor says the town of Ennis will be hopping. And that's Councillor Pat Daly, who's mayor of Ennis. And he is promoting the St. Patrick's Day Parade. And helping to promote that parade, there's a picture of a man there with a fiddle on the front of the Clare Champion, a lovely photo.
Do we know him?
We do indeed know him. And he's a man that's been on Scariff Bay Community Radio from time to time. And that's Michael Grogan from Drewsborough.
And he's dressed as a leprechaun.
He's dressed as a leprechaun. I've never seen Michael dressed as a leprechaun.
Allegedly dressed as a... I'm very suspicious about the photograph there. Since the Princess of Wales started modifying photographs, I'm paying particular attention to every photograph that appears in the press.
By the way, since you mentioned that, David, what's all the fuss about in relation to the royal family?
From an ordinary family point of view, we all might touch up photographs. But because newspapers have rules about publishing, and journalists have published, they don't publish photoshopped imagery.
Yeah.
And so when it was discovered, and it was discovered because it wasn't revealed by the royal family that it had been touched up, they cancelled it. They said they're withdrawing this and they're not going to publish it, and it was a mistake to publish it. The problem was, of course, that there were all these conspiracies around the health of the Princess of Wales, and it only added to that conspiratorial thing that was hanging around her. Yeah. Oh, she must have modified this photo for other ulterior motives. So as a result, anyway, we're all very sensitive about photographs.
Yeah. Is there a question of a photograph of the princess, either with family or on her own, is actually a valuable possession if you have it. Isn't that right?
A photograph.
Well, if you were the photographer that took it,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you got a photograph when you weren't supposed to get a photograph.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be definitely. That photograph would sell.
There's no doubt about it.
I think there's a lot more things now that we should be thinking about in both government and local level.
But
a picture of the Princess of Wales.
But I'm worried about the Princess of Michael Grogan.
Yeah,
the picture of Michael Grogan. And I've texted Michael Grogan to see if he, before the end of the program, if he texts me back, I will reveal what he says about the photograph.
Okay.
We would ask Pat. I have a question for Pat.
Yes, and I'm sure he'll answer it to the best of his ability.
He wants a sincere question, and here it is. Politicians must flag US role in Israel's war on Palestine. Pat Hayes has raised that, and he's put it to the plethora of human beings that are leaving the shores of Shannon, do you know? For this weekend.
Yeah, it's on page 4 of the Clare Echo, John.
And now he's saying, you better get across to those chappies across the water. You better get across to them the dissatisfaction that the Irish people and the Irish government have with regard to what's happening in Palestine and in Israel. Pat, what would you be saying to that?
Well, I agree with Pat Hayes. I think it's terrible. It's actually awful. The government, they gave $3.8 billion dollars worth of military aid to Israel. And I was looking at the television before I came out, and I see Anthony Blinken on Sky News.
Yeah.
And he's talking about about what's happening and all of this and what they're doing and what they're trying to do, and they're still giving out $3.8 billion a year to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Since 1947, they've given them loads. I don't know how many billion dollars they have given them since 1947.
Mm-hmm. Is it easy for our lads to kind of raise that question?
Well, of course. Well, why wouldn't it be easy for them? If anyone with any common sense, they should raise it.
Well, I don't know what the figures are for the number of people that Putin has killed in Ukraine. But I would put this on a par with what's going on in Ukraine, except it's mostly civilians who are being killed.
Targeted here.
I would say that this, what is happening, I mean, the Americans are, as you said, Pat, are supplying billions worth of armaments and support.
Yeah, $3.8 billion in 2023 last year.
To Israel.
Yeah.
And down through the years, I mean, people have looked on that and said, Israel is surrounded by, countries who, some of whom would like to see the end of Israel.
And went to war against
Israel.
A couple of times.
I can understand why the support has been there over the years. But, I mean, I think we're talking about a government in Israel who are out of control, and who are killing civilians by the tens of thousands. Yeah.
Well, I think over the last few weeks, we have seen a shift in American government thinking. And as of this week, in the lead up to this program, the most senior Democratic senator and also the most senior Jew in American politics, Senator Schumer, said rather remarkably that Netanyahu has to go and calling for new elections in Israel. So we're seeing and Biden has turned and Blinken has turned. Now they'll still continue to give the weapons because they have to, I think, because of the very large Jewish diaspora in America and their influence in American politics. If they didn't, they'd be serious trouble. And there's the Holocaust guilt and all of that going on as well. Yeah. Now, can I bring it back to County Clare, Jim?
Yes.
Because I wonder, at the very last bit, the very last bit of this article, it says, Clare's current mayor, Councillor Joe Cooney, thanked Councillor Hayes for his contribution, but neither he nor the chief executive of the council, Pat Dowling, committed to carry out the request. And I wonder, I support Councillor Hayes in raising it, but I just wonder, is it a local issue that he should be actually spending a bit of time on? It's great that we hear our local politicians. Now, it's a safe bet because our government has adopted that position. We know the Taoiseach and the Minister for Foreign Affairs and all the other government ministers who are in America will be raising this along the lines of Councillor.
Will they raise it?
Well, they've said they will, that they're committed.
Yeah.
And I was listening to Mary Lou MacDonald, and she was even commending the government for raising it, and she's going to be raising it as well. So, I mean, it's easy. This is what I'm saying. It's easy when we're all agreed that the Americans should change their mind.
Yeah.
Now, I think we should leave it up, though, to the national politicians. Should Clare County Council be doing anything? I'm not so sure. The President Biden and his administration will be listening to...
Well, I think it should be highlighted. There's no harm in highlighting it. I think it should be highlighted in every position because it's wrong.
Yeah. Will our councillors be going out to America?
You can't just serve the people and just kill them.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's Joe Cooley. It's the
Joe
mayor
Cooley
of Clare
out there and
will be representing.
Mr. Dowling has gone out as well.
Yeah. So it would be curious in covering. For the journalists covering, perhaps if they do cover the county council visits, to see if Joe Cooney will mention it in his speeches.
He probably won't be getting in a position to be in the White House.
But wherever he is making a public speech.
Leo Varadkar has gone out there and he committed to help him on the radio today. He's committed to say
but is it, doesn't Councillor Hayes want the council to articulate this?
Yes, he does. Yeah.
But I suppose it can be articulated, and it doesn't necessarily have to be articulated in a speech.
No.
Like, the way I'd look at it is, we have been friends with America for a long, long time, and there's multiple reasons for that. So, as a good friend of the United States, we would be remiss in not telling them what we think.
So the process by which you'd convey that would be the critical thing, wouldn't it?
It would. And you don't. I mean, doing it in public means you're...
playing to the card.
You're playing to the gallery.
Yeah.
And you don't have to do that.
No.
But who would you expect Councillor, the Mayor of Clare, Councillor Cooney, to be saying it to?
Whatever senior people he's meeting.
Yeah.
I would say.
Mm. Mm. But I don't think there would be any harm for it to be articulated in public either.
There probably wouldn't, but it's a different thing when it goes public. Then people have to take sides whereas you do it privately sometimes can be more useful.
Yeah.
Okay. Deputy Crowe on the front page of the Clare Champion is, he's giving out anyway. Owen Ryan has an article there. Crowe claims he's being denied accurate information. And it's to do with the international protection applicants. And he would say that, you know, denying information is allowing inaccurate information to be spread by bad actors in the whole thing.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
With that analysis of yours.
But you have to agree with that analysis. And you'd imagine the department would be given the TDs proper...
We've illustrations of the department, the civil servants, giving misinformation to the minister. Yeah, a rather embarrassing situation recently in that regard.
Yeah, I suppose it's rather than give inaccurate information, it's not providing the information that people need.
Yes.
It's funny, I was looking, we've talked here before about the, you know, international protection applicants. I was looking at Channel 4 News during the week. Channel 4 have an excellent news at 7 o'clock every evening. And one of their reporters, Pádraig O'Brien, was sent to Dublin to talk to people on all sides of the, let's say, the question of how the applicants, those people who look for asylum here, are welcomed. And it was fascinating. It was very interesting. Mm. To my mind, he interviewed some of the people who we all know what Marjorie Taylor Greene said a week ago to Emily Maclis. Word language, John, that we couldn't repeat on this program.
Indeed.
But he spoke, the Channel 4 man, Pádraig O'Brien, spoke to a few people who would be very, let's say, anti-immigrants.
Yeah.
And I mean, all I could think of was, and one of them at least ended up by telling him to F off at the end of it.
Yes.
They struck me as a kind of a MAGA type crowd. They struck me as the kind of people who would, if they're in America, would vote for Donald Trump and would go around with red hats and flags and whatever.
Yeah.
But it didn't paint a good picture of us in that report.
We have 1,100 people approximately sleeping in tents above around the in Dublin in Mount Street or above around the area where the office, special protection offices, which is scandalous. It's absolutely scandalous that people, and that there's rubbish and dirt and everything around the place.
Well, I remember, Pat.
It's scandalous what's happening there.
About 2 months ago, when we started on them, three months ago, I raised the question here that there is a point reached where we are no longer in a position to actually be able to help refugees. That was going to come. Nobody spoke in favour with me. Now we realise that definitely we have stretched to a point that we can't.
But John, we're not.
You think not?
We're not, no.
And I would agree with
that. There's loads and loads of vacant buildings around the island that could be the door people could put into. It's absolutely scandalous what's going on.
Will you give me one of those buildings?
The Royal Hospital in Dublin. A big, so the fellows are sleeping outside the door. Mm. And inside the door is a fine place. If there was a bit of work done, that it should accommodate those people.
Yeah.
And I said it before here, and I'm going to say it again. Michael J. Higgins, Arson Oaksman, 90 rooms, all empty. Why not put him out in a house down the road with a few rooms in it and put those people in there? He came out there very. We don't hear him talking at all now about it.
I actually, and it is the OP, he doesn't own Áras an Uachtaráin, but the OPW own Áras an Uachtaráin, and the OPW own the premises that Councillor Crowe wants information about. Councillor Crowe is being denied, he's asked a parliamentary question about the facility in Shannon and what its intended use is for, and he's not got a response. And it's the OPW who own it, so it's not a commercial thing. So the OPW, as Pat has said, is the largest property owner in the country. We own it,
yes.
The OPW run it, so it's state property, it's our property. But what have they been doing on this question?
Nothing.
Nothing. Have they provided any facilities?
No.
Now, they're maybe providing the facility in Shannon, but are they doing enough?
That's a commercial building, that's a big office building.
We have a number of army barracks that are not used anymore. That could are ideal for accommodation. Now, it's not very pleasant, I'm sure, but we do have a lot of facilities.
There was an article in the Irish, in the Sun or some one of those Irish papers anyway, recently. But there was 14 million worth of properties from the HSE empty.
Yeah.
Why weren't they being used?
Yeah. No, on page 2 of the Clare Echo, they're talking about the County Council looking at derelict sites, 250 derelict properties in County Clare.
The derelict property mightn't be
in great shape, but 'tis a damn sight better than in a tent on the side of the street.
Well, anything is better than that.
Yeah. And of course, these are probably houses, and we know that there is a housing crisis. It's good to see, though, that Clare are trying to tackle this issue.
But you're only getting a tiny little bit of information there about those properties that are out there. I mean, they're cheaper to build from scratch, I'd imagine.
These properties are people who have applied for the grant
to do up a derelict property.
There's another article elsewhere in the paper.
There are properties. I mean, I don't think we need to develop a derelict property so that it's a kind of has a bare rating of A or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you can develop it to a certain extent that you can take people off the streets.
Yeah, I think there is a crisis, and listening to and watching it on the TV news where volunteer doctors are treating patients, one or two seemingly, it's hard to believe, with frostbite. and cases of scabies. And these diseases, of course, transmit very easily in the sort of the outside conditions that these poor people are from. And they're subject, of course, to disease. Anybody living outdoors, no matter who they are or where they come from, have a shorter lifespan if they're there for the long term. The homeless people that I'm talking about in Dublin, we saw a woman who died recently who was homeless. Not an international protection
How do you deal with that type of case then?
Well, you try...
In terms of what you're thinking is a solution.
For the Councillor Deputy O'Callaghan, who is a member of the government governing parties, wrote to the minister this week about it, saying, we can't have the tents here. And we should provide, if not housing, we should provide a better site.
Then why aren't we doing that?
And we, in this county, of course, where are our tents?
In Meelik, down in
Meelik. Yeah. I mean, we forget that we have tents as well. But there's probably a serviced site.
Yeah, it's a service site.
Yeah. I don't know, John, what the solution is. I would hope that going what Pat has said, that the government would actually redouble its efforts to find a better set of accommodation rather than tents altogether.
Okay.
I wouldn't accept, though, that we're full or that we haven't the capacity. This country has loads of capacity.
We have the capacity if we had the what's called to do it.
Yeah.
There's no votes.
The will to do
Them fellas around, them fellas in the tents around Mount Sligo, in Dublin, they have no vote.
No. Listen, we leave it at that for the present. We've reached half time.
Can we come back later in the...
We can, John, yes, of course. Pat has his notebook out.
I hope it's going to be a St. Patrick's. Stay tuned.
We'll have to wait and see.
We'll have an Irish song.
Oh,
we'll
good.
We'll have the Irish Rover from the Dubliners.
Ah, that's a good one.
Lovely. Irish Rover. Thanks, Pat.
On the 4th of July, 1806, we set sail from the sweet cove of Cork. We were sailing away with a cargo of bricks for the Grand City Hall in New York. 'Twas a wonderful craft, she was rigged for a laugh. You know how the wild winds drove her. She stood several blasts, she had 27 masts, and they called her the Irish Rover.
You're very welcome back. You're listening to Local Media This Week on Scariff Bay Community Radio, sponsored by Ruth Griffin Photography. And there Pat had for us the Irish Rover by the famous Dubliners. Lovely Irish song for the weekend. Let's see what he'll have at the end of the programme. John.
Yeah.
The referendum, John, that we had last week.
Is it a mention? I was asked this a few times during the week. Is it referendums? Or referenda? What do you mean?
I would go referenda, whether I'm...
That's your Latin, right or wrong. Your Latin coming through.
Yes.
Jerry Ryan, God be... You're not God.
I don't know why the government and RTE and some other media outlets have decided that the plural of referendum is referendums. Because every other agenda is the plural for an agendum. You think of any word ending in an and the plural is usually. I'd agree with you, John. The standards are dropping in this country.
Page 60 as well, of referendum,
paradigm
shift of people with disabilities.
Yes. Anyway, what were you asking?
Well, gentlemen, are we? Was it a shock, this result, or were you expecting it?
Oh, that's what you're talking about. Yeah. I'm not surprised at all. And why am I not surprised? Number one, shocking choice of language. Okay? With the result...
You wanted more clearer language.
Absolutely. We were talking about this before we came in, Jim. And we came to the conclusion that really a lot of people had decided... They asked themselves a question. What is it really? Who called it? Why did they call it? Nogay called the idea. We had opportunities to have popular expression through the medium of the
Citizens' Assembly.
The Assembly. Lovely, lovely. Classical old Greek style of, you know, giving the people
a voice.
And Jim, you've been to Greece, haven't you?
Yes.
And you've sat in many a stadia, stadium.
Yes.
Haven't you?
Yes.
And you could visualize 2,000 years ago, sitting there while they played Iphigenia and Taurus or one of the Euripides plays, whatever. Okay. So, the Greeks had it right. They elected you into a position. They evaluated your contribution and your fulfillment of the role which we gave you, okay? Absolutely. If you fell short, you were at the next assembly, you were kicked out. We don't have the concept of accountability with results.
I suppose in the next 12 months, John, if people felt very strongly on this particular issue, they might accordingly vote their TDs. Now, the big problem, of course, is that some of the TDs who campaigned for a yes vote, some of them actually voted no. Can you believe that?
Well, there'd be parties that campaigned for...
Some of them actually went
actually
out
campaigned, yes.
And voted...
Obey.
And campaigned and canvassed. Now, the big problem is, was anybody canvassed here by any, either our local politicians or our national politicians, or by anybody else?
I'm saying no.
No.
And nobody knocked on my door.
Yeah.
Now, isn't that a failure?
Did you see a poster?
And I didn't see any poster.
No.
I didn't see any poster. It was as if, and this is how you lose elections and referenda. You have to make an effort. If the politicians themselves don't make an effort, then people will get the impression that this is not that important.
So, David, I suppose that begs the question then, who in the political world was responsible for suggesting that we needed a referendum?
Well, for a very long time, it has been recorded that the language in our constitution, particularly relating to women, is sexist and old-fashioned. And I would go along with that. And I would have thought that most people would have gone on that. They made it a bit more complicated. The Citizens' Assembly, on that one question about a mother's place in the home, the Citizens' Assembly said it should be just removed. Now, the government didn't take that advice, and they modified it. And that was the question put to us. And the electorate decided they didn't like that.
I wonder. I mean, I would have heard around and about, just in general conversation, the idea of removing the word mother from the Constitution.
Yes.
And, I mean, I know several people who I would have overheard or would have said it to me, saying... Why would you remove the word mother from the Constitution? Just a simple thing. Why? And they didn't agree with this.
Because I think fathers have as much a right to be in the home as mothers do.
But I would...
And to be given that state recognition.
And then put in mother and father. Yeah. I mean, if I just think to take out mother gave the wrong message in a referendum. For people who look just at that particular thing of it.
And how do you handle responsibilities? If you give to the male
equal responsibility, and we do know that I know some men who've decided to stay
at home
and be the person who provides the care to their children and facilitates the mother to go out and work.
But I would also say, sorry Pat, go ahead.
Sorry, Jim, just on the disabilities one, they said they'd endeavour to look after people with disabilities.
Yes, or strive.
Strive, Well, strive, that's a very broad word.
Yeah.
So I think that's why an awful lot of people voted against that and attempted against it.
But I suppose in the Constitution, which is our overarching government, you have to be a little bit... You can't be too specific in the type of language you use. But that's where the legislation then comes in. You would expect then the government to say, if you pass this, this is what you would expect to see in the legislation. And we would give carers then this, that and the other.
And we'd have We'd have loads of senior counsel earning good money clarifying what meaning of that word in the revised constitution.
Yes, and the word durable relationship as well,
yes,
John.
Yes, durable.
In the family one, durable relationship.
Did you ever go? Well, did you ever have, like they had over in Kilkishan?
It might have been durable for a few minutes.
durable relations.
Well, Pat and I would have been in Kilkishan Marquee many times and
looking for a durable relationship.
It was certainly durable on the night. Okay, listen, we must go on. I think as well, just finally, that people who didn't understand it weren't quite sure what to do. Maybe the powers that be thought they'd stay at home and let everybody else in to vote yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they didn't. They went in and voted no.
There was actually a very good turnout. 44% in County Clare, which matched the national average roughly.
And a friend of ours from Liston there, the Patsy O'Grady, turned up with the count. He was the only one who turned up with the count in County Clare.
Yes. Was Scariff Bay Radio not represented at the count?
No. We talked to him in Liston there, the Patsy O'Grady, he's in Kilmeary.
Yeah.
On page 8.
Yeah, he's a big singer in the house up in Kilmeary. Music and singing and all that.
But hold a second now, Pat. The fact that there is a photograph of him suggests that Pádraig McMahon might have been there as well, behind the camera.
Listen, we'll go on. Today is St. Patrick's Day, and we're coming a little bit earlier today. Our programme started at 1 o'clock. And so maybe there's still time to go to some parades. And I know it's great to see that in our area here of East Clare, John, there are 6 parades on this weekend.
And none of them clashing. You can go from one to the
You other. Can more or less. Can you might you? Need to speed up if you were going from one to between some of them. Yeah. But one took place yesterday,
Which one?
In Kilkishan.
Kilkishan.
That's took place yesterday, Saturday.
Yeah, quite a bit.
But there are 5 others happening today.
Looming.
And it's lovely to see it.
Yes.
They'll
be hopping.
They'll be hopping in Ennis anyway, as Pat Daly says.
Yeah. Well, I suppose we'll just go through one from the top of the bottom. Liston Blair was on yesterday, one gym from the Pilgrim and Liston Blair. They're in your innocence on Sunday morning at 11 a.m. Liscannor at 12 today, 12 noon, and Kilkee at 12 noon, and Kilfenora at 12, Feakle at 12, so they're all on today at 12.
What's the forecast, Pat?
The Bridge at 12, I think Shawry. Fenora at 1 o'clock today as well, Sunday, and Shannon at 1 o'clock, Milton and Elbe at 2:30, Kilrush at 3 p.m., Crusheen 3, Doolin at 2, Killaloo at 2:15, in Simon at 3 p.m., Scariff at 3 p.m. from Hessels and from Granny, and Malcolm Douglas at 4, and Tuller at 4:30. So they're all the ones around County Clare.
Pat, why do you think the Killaloo one is at 2:15? Like, that's a very odd time. All the others are at the top of the hour or half past the hour. Why 2:15 do you think the Killaloo people have decided to kick it off? Are they very precise down there?
I don't really know.
It starts in Ballina.
Yeah.
It starts in Ballina. But Ballina is not mentioned. Well, it is mentioned from Ballina. But I still don't understand. So what if it starts in Ballina? Why is it at 2? Why isn't it 2 o'clock?
The only thing I'm thinking of is the Tullapipe Band are in great demand on this day.
It might
be.
To facilitate the band, potentially.
Yes, because the Tullapipe Band presumably will lead it across the bridge.
Yes.
And then they'll pack up their instruments.
And come up to Tomb Grainy.
And then when they're finished, then in Scariff, they'll pack up again and go to Tulla.
They will. And we know one of our presenters here, Daryl Emy, is in the process of packing his drum at the moment.
Yes. We wish Dara and all the members of the Tullip Pipe Band the best.
Actually, there's one missing there, Jim. I don't see it covered there. There's one in Shannon. There's a parade in the airport, rather than the Shannon Town. New parade route this year is heading there in the Shannon Town place. So.
Yes. There's also one in Bodaik this year, which isn't mentioned there.
In Bodaik.
Well. In Bodaik.
Yeah. That's strange.
Starting at the GA Park. Intrum Grainy.
And
travelling over as far as Bodaik.
At what time?
I think, and I interviewed Barbara Malone during the week about it, I think it's either one or half one. I think it's maybe one.
Yeah.
So people would have time to go to Bodaik
and then come back to
and then come back to Tom Grainy and queue up to go.
Jim, there's an article there on page 8 that you're, the government reply, an insult as little progress made on above the shop housing. Isn't that? I thought that was going to be a strong point in the refurbishment of our towns.
Yes. Sorry, John. Bodaik parade at 1:30 p.m.
Bodaik parade at 1:30.
Yeah, and the airport one is on at 2, Jim, just as we just see here. The one in Shannon is at 2.
Lovely.
And they have music from 12 to 6.
So now, John, about developing the space above houses, above shops.
To restore the 19th century.
Yeah. I mean, this has been available, this scheme to encourage living over the shop and therefore bring back life into towns and villages and cities. But it hasn't taken off, unfortunately, and probably a few reasons for it. Some people simply don't want to live over shops and want to live and want to have a bit of space, whatever the reasons are. The government, I mean, you've read this article, I haven't, so you might be able to articulate
it. The reality
more.
Is it hasn't grabbed the public face sufficiently. I mean, are we sold completely on the car? And if you are, then where are you going to park your car if you happen to have living accommodation above a shop?
Above a shop, yes. And it would be mostly rental, I suppose.
I'd imagine so,
I lived above a shop for 2 years of my life. Two separate years.
Not down here, though.
Yes, and in Dublin, first of all, I shared a flat with another guy, another teacher, and we lived above the shop for 2 years. And it was lovely. We had only to pop down to the shop for something.
For the bottle of milk?
Yes, it was great. Yeah. And then the first year we were married, we lived in what was called Lily Max. We lived above that.
Yeah. Lily lives in Scarab.
Yeah, she was dead, you know, she was dead then and the house had changed. She had a sweet shop. Where the Brow Bar is now, there beside the old post office.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's just, I see nothing at all wrong with living above a shop, John.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I suppose, Jim, on the 50,000, the grant of 50,000 is there, and if there's a derelict, you'll get another 20.
Yeah. Now, the big problem, Pat, is, I know we're running out of time, with the general vacant thing, banks are reluctant to lend.
Yeah.
Builders are reluctant to take on because you don't get the money until after it's being built. Now, if anybody out there who knows about dealing with builders is, you pay in stages. You pay after they do a certain amount. So a builder has to fork out all the money and then wait months because you have to be inspected and therefore approved for it. Yeah, exactly. So the scheme does need a little bit of tweaking. Mm. And there is another story that there are 232 grants applications in. How many have been paid, though? That's the more important question.
Which means you have to take out a loan.
And the banks are reluctant to give loans for derelict property.
Yeah. Yeah. I see on page 11 of the Clare Echo, Mary Howard, on a different topic, hits out at cruel dental waiting lists. Yes, and I know we should stay with East Clare, but this was something that, you know, children with special needs in particular, who are, I would say, most of the time, left behind by various governments and by various government departments over the years. But she hits out at cruel dental waiting lists, and I just thought that was worth the mention.
Yeah. How about the old county pass?
Yes, tell us about that, John.
Well, Luke actually is an authority on it.
We need to talk about East Clare.
Yes.
No, you're issued with a card, okay?
Yes.
Which entitles you to privileged access.
To East Clare. We want people to come county. To East Clare, yeah. don't we? Well,
and privilege, does that mean like cheaper access?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. yeah. And it's free. Someone is paying for it somewhere along the line.
Yes,
I'm not quite sure who. So it's an idea, you know.
Yeah.
We were, during the break, just trying to move on very quickly. So looking at the East Clare page, page 13 of the Clare Champion, I see a couple of photographs there. St. Patrick talking to some of his fans in the Killaloo Ballina parade, I presume, and a scene from the Tullow St. Patrick's Day parade. But David, I gather you have a problem with that photograph.
I do. I had a problem in the first half with the front page photo, but I'll accept that that may be real. But this is definitely fake news. It says here it's a scene from the Tullow St. Patrick's Day parade in 2022. The story is a lovely story. It's the return of the Kilkishan parade, Herald's bumper St. Patrick's Day, and fair play to the people in Kilkishan. But this photograph is not a photograph from Tullow. It is, in fact, it's a wonderful photograph of two pairs of legs hanging out of a concrete mixer being pulled by a tractor Wilson, the blacksmith from Mount Shannon,
Mark Wilson,
who is sporting the tricolour on top of a very elaborate headgear. It is not Tullow. It is, in fact, Tuam Graney.
And you should know.
And as a native of Tuam Graney, and we have other Tuam Graney people around the table, it is definitely Tuam Graney and not Tullow. So we have to get on to the editors of the Clare Champion and in a very severe tone, reprimand this fake news, and we want an apology. The people of Tuam Graney want an apology in the next issue.
Okay.
Marie gets a mention here, Marie McNamara of Scarab Bay Community Radio, with the National Families for the Parades of Scarab.
Which is on at 3 o'clock today.
Okay. Just looking at another article there, concern about the loss of commercial businesses in Killaloo as Woods get plans over the line. And that's Keith Wood, who he's changing the former business to use being a residence. And we were just talking during the break there about the main street in Killaloo, down the hill,
yeah.
And a lot of things have closed there, and it seems to be, you know, relatively quiet area.
It is, and I think it's a missed opportunity.
I see the planner here has said it as well. Chair County Council granted planning permission for this development. However, an executive planner sounded a note of caution in a planner's report. While the current proposal is acceptable in principle, the ongoing loss of commercial activity in the town centre is a matter of concern, and future applications of a similar nature should be monitored on a case-by-case basis to ensure the continued vibrancy of town centres.
So, Pat, why did the planner accept the planning application then? He's after pointing out the problem with the loss of commercial... This was a proposal, by the way, to change the use of a coffee shop into a residence. And he's pointed out the problem, and yet planning application was approved. And he says, we should watch out for this in the future. I mean, sure, what are our planners doing? And we expect our planners to take the business life and the vibrancy of the main thoroughfares in our town seriously. And yet, this is the best they can come up with.
Well,
fair play, Keith Wood is entitled, of course, to apply for planning permission and to get that planning permission. I personally would hope that all the people who own property down there in Killaloo, and Keith Wood has done a great job with the sporting facilities that the town has to offer and the other clubs have. I think if they tried to put as much energy into reviving the commercial life of the town, we would give them great praise and support.
There seems to be a bit of life at the very bottom of the town.
There is.
You know, there's Raw and the chemists and one or two other places.
That's right.
And at the top of the town, you have Heaney's and
you do.
One or two pubs.
But that thoroughfare.
Yeah.
And with the attention now that Killaloo is getting from the RT drama
that has been on our TV, the existence of one of the finest cathedrals we have in the country, the fact...
And they're getting some money from the Heritage Council.
They are. And the fact that we will have this brand new bridge next year, and the magnificent facilities that the lake and the river provides, means that Killaloe should be actually gaining from all of these opportunities. Instead, it's going into reverse, and I think it's very sad.
Mm. Yeah, because, I mean, it's a fantastic place, and it's a very diverse community as well. You know, a lovely place to visit, and as you said, the cathedral is the jewel in the crown. Mm. Okay, I think we're nearly done as far as today is concerned, or we've come to the end. May I offer our thanks to you, John?
You're welcome, Jim.
And to Pat.
Thanks, Jim.
And to David.
I think it's time to wet the green. Wet the shamrock, I think.
We'll see what parade we'll go to. And thank you very much. Pat, what are we going to? Are you going to play us out with today?
Well, Jim, it's Sunday. We will be hoping we'll be all singing the field last night after the big rugby game on Saturday evening.
Yes. So the Fields of Athenry, Paddy Riley, I presume. Yeah. Okay, Pat, the Fields of Athenry by Paddy Riley. Many thanks to you for listening. We'll be back at our usual time, hopefully, please God, of 2 o'clock next Sunday. So from us for now, goodbye and God bless.
By a lonely prison wall, I heard a young girl calling. Michael, they have taken you away, for you stole Trevelyan's corn, so the young might see the morn. Now a prison ship lies waiting in the bay.